How would you like to die today, motherfucker?
No, it's not a real death threat, sir.
Hey, we're recording the podcast. Shut up.
Good morning to you, wherever you are, because it is a morning somewhere for March 5th, 2024. My name is Bernie Burns. Joining me, as always, a lady who is responsible for 25% of the national debt, Ashley Burns. Hey, Ash, how you doing?
I'm feeling expensive.
So right out of the gate is one of my favorite drops that I never got to use, which was the Silicon Valley drop of how would you like to die today, motherfucker? Because Kumail Nanjiani, alum of Silicon Valley, is in the news today because he recently was cast in season 4 of Only Murders in the Building. What network is that on, Ash? What streaming service?
I watch it on Hulu.
That's Hulu, right? Yeah, it's a Hulu one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it may also be broadcast, but I've always watched it Hulu. Love that show. It's so much fun.
It's got a really, really great cast. Nathan Lane was really great in the first season. It's Martin Short, Steve Martin, Selena Gomez, Tina Fey's in that as well, and now Kumail Nanjiani.
Yeah, they've
one of my absolutely favorite actors.
Yeah, they've been making some fun announcements for season 4. Previously announced members of the cast for this new season include Eugene Levy, Eva Longoria, and Molly Shannon. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then
no shit, Molly Shannon. Wow.
Yeah, and I think I am a little bit behind, so I'm not 100% on who all was in season 3, but that was a stacked cast as well. If you're a comedic actor, I feel like this show is a really fun one to be a part of. If for no other reason, Steve Martin, Martin Short, what's not to love?
Yeah, season 3 included Meryl Streep and Paul Rudd. So clearly a bit of a dip talent-wise there for them in season 3. Glad to see that they've recovered from that little valley they went through. Yeah, so we need to catch up. We need to watch season 3 of Only Murders in the Building. We had a great time watching the first one, and we will definitely tune in for season 4, especially now that Mr. Nanjiani is in the cast. I reached out to Kumail for comment, and as of recording time, he did not come back with a statement. So what are you hiding, Mr. Nanjiani?
What are you hiding? You know, it is funny that considering that I don't really go in for true crime, a show about people who do go in for true crime, I love it.
I think it's a great concept because it's a fictionalized show. It's like every season they have a different whodunit crime to solve. But the people solving it are, you know, the main cast, Steve Martin, Martin Short, Selena Gomez, and they are true crime podcast fans in the show. It's just a great idea.
Yeah. The very first episode of the show, if you haven't caught it, is definitely worth checking out. If for no other reason, it's like, you know, as the very first crime kicks off and as they find each other and set this whole thing up, it's, I don't know, it's just a very charming, very fun show about murder. But only murders in the building.
So, Ash, while we're talking about shows that are coming out, there was also another kind of announcement that was made recently. It was more like the first images from the production. There was a still released from Tron Ares, which is the sequel to Tron Legacy. And I learned two things from that image. The first thing I learned is they're making a new Tron movie. I had no clue. And the other one was that Jared Leto is in the movie, and he's actually one of the producers behind it as well.
Yeah, I think that they renamed it. I think they were calling it Tron Ascension or something like that, which is why Ares might seem like it's coming out of nowhere. But one of my favorite things about this sort of first look shot that they've put out is that it's essentially the character is doing the sexy girl superhero pose. The one that the Black Widow gets caught with, and you know, in the like Avengers poster where everyone is like muscly and like grr, and then she's like, look at my butt. That's Jared Leto this time. Look at his butt, everybody.
Tron is a bit of a weird one for me because I love the property. I love Tron like overall. But I can't say that I like any of the Tron movies individually. Like, if someone were to ask me, do you like Tron? I go, absolutely. I love Tron. And then they asked, well, do you want to go see a Tron movie? No. Nah. thank you, but yeah, I'm not interested. I mean, I don't dislike them, but I don't like the individual movies as much as I like the overall concept of Tron. I love the light cycles. If I see the light cycles, I'll definitely tune in and watch that. But I don't go out of my way to watch Tron movies. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, but I guess I love Tron. I didn't watch the original movie when I was young, so I didn't develop that sort of formative relationship with Tron. But I really liked Tron Legacy when it came out because it was the flashy, like very stylized sci-fi look that is very unique, in my opinion, to Tron. And also, this is really stupid, but there's a video game that came out around the same time, and they had a light cycle dueling mode that was amazing. And I think they had another one with the discs.
Are you talking about the arcade game that they made?
It was a console or PC game. I'll look up and see if I can find out what it was.
Oh, really? I don't remember. There was two games in the arcade. There was you're talking about for the original Tron, right?
No, was Tron 2.0. It came out in 2003. It was an FPS. It was developed by Monolith, but I primarily remember the light cycle. And you know what? I feel like other games have done the light cycle thing as well. I might honestly be thinking of Kingdom Hearts here as well, because I'm pretty sure that
Kingdom Hearts has light cycles in it. Oh, because they have Disney stuff.
Right? Yeah. Exactly.
Light cycles are like the Boba Fett of the Tron franchise because they don't get a lot of screen time and it's almost impossible to fuck them up. The only way they can make them worse is if they give them more screen time. That's about it. You know?
Here's how they can make them worse is if they make a light cycle chase at 20 miles an hour.
But the other development in the Tron world is that Cillian Murphy, who was in the first, I shouldn't say the first one, he was in Tron Legacy, which was the second one, and was being set up as the main villain. It's not really clear whether or not he's going to be in it because he's not in any of the cast lists for Tron Ares. But the still image, a little bit of a spoiler here, does contain an Easter egg that says Dillinger on the back of Ares' uniform, and so on the disc. And so that would indicate that it's part of that world, and it could be actually a story from the villain's perspective. And from the official synopsis by Disney, I assume, it says, Tron Ares follows a highly sophisticated program, Ares, who is sent from the digital world into the real world on a dangerous mission, marking humankind's first encounter with AI beings. So that's a flip of the whole Tron mythos, is that now the computers are coming out into the real world.
Can I share a little spoiler?
Yeah.
He's after John Connor.
He's going to get him. He's going to go back in time and kill John Connor. But actually, Tron has an interesting tie-in to everything we've been talking about recently, because Tron came out, I want to say, in like 1982, maybe 1981. Ash, you can look it up.
It was 82.
82. It was snubbed for an Academy Award for Best Visual Effects because at the time they said that they cheated by using computers to make the visual effects, which if you fast forward 40 years, is absolutely crazy because no one would say that about a modern movie. But it kind of ties into what we've been talking about with AI in the modern era. Now, if people use AI to make any kind of content, it seems like cheap or immoral to do it. But I wonder, you know, 40 years from now, they'll be like, why would they think like that?
Yeah, it's interesting to see what that conversation looked like at the time, and then where we are now, and then what the conversation about now is going to be in the future. How will it be remembered?
And I think it was probably that argument about snubbing Tron was based in all the same things it was based in. It would be based in today. Like, it was costing people's jobs and artists, you know, and it was, now we're turning this stuff over to computers to do instead of having a team of compositors and painters, you know, and things like that. You know, it was probably based in the same exact arguments that we use against AI content today. So it's just interesting. I'm not taking a side either way. I'm just saying it's interesting, especially for the theme of Tron to be part of that debate as well.
Well,
for a very long period of time.
Speaking of faking things out, I don't know if you've been following this, but there was a ransomware group that said they had hacked Epic and they were going to release a ton of data if Epic Games didn't pay them. Epic, of course, being the makers of Fortnite, and they have their own game distribution platform. So, of course, a leak of personal data would be a really big deal. It turns out that was fake. That was not real. They made the threat and they hoped that Epic would pay out.
Really?
Just on the possibility that they had in fact been breached. Epic came out and immediately said there's no evidence that there's been a security breach or anything like that. And the guys just went, yeah. I'm gonna read you a quote. This
I mean, in the world of like deep fakes and everything, now we just have these dudes like making crank calls, it sounds like.
That's basically the equivalent of they just like called up and were like, hey, give us money. Epic said, nah. And they went, okay then. They said,
okay.
Now the real question is, why confess all this when we could just run away? This is a spokesperson for the ransomware group. It says, this was done to illustrate the process of our scam. We don't think of ourselves as hackers, but rather as criminal geniuses, if you can call us that. Buddy, I don't. I don't.
What
call
in the world?
That.
This is like performance art. What? That is someone who feels very safe in the anonymity of the internet. That's what that is, that they can make a joke and comment on it.
It's brilliant. I love this.
Do you remember earlier this year, while we're on the topic of leaks and hacks, do you remember earlier this year there was a military, I think out of San Antonio, an Air Force guy that leaked about a bunch of information about the Pentagon?
Yeah,
and
that was
he was just recently like sentenced.
Discord group or something, right?
Yep. Yeah. Pentagon leaker Jack Teixeira agrees to accept 16-year prison sentence. That's a really weird headline. I agree to accept my prison sentence. That must mean they reached some kind of plea deal.
I wonder if that means, or does that mean that you can just go, nah, and then the judge goes, oh, on second thought, you're right. You are not a you are a criminal genius. You're not a hacker. You're a criminal genius.
I misspoke there. I said San Antonio and Air Force because there's an Air Force base in San Antonio. It was a Massachusetts Air National Guardsman, Jack Teixeira. That's probably the Teixeira, which just threw me off, made me think it was from San Antonio. Agreed Monday that he caused one of the most extraordinary leaks of national defense secrets in years and agreed to accept a prison sentence of 16 years, which could be the longest sentence in an unlawful retention case.
Yeah, that sounds
22
like,
years
yeah,
old. So yeah.
That's a long time for a little bit of internet clout.
It is a long time in prison for a little bit of internet clout, man. Gosh, unbelievable. Also, how in the hell did an Air National Guardsman have access to anything that would be significant intelligence information?
I don't know how much of it was necessarily significant and how much of it was making an example of.
Yeah, yeah. And what was the other leak? While we're on the topic of this, the kid who leaked a ton of information about GTA... he basically was just put in a mental institution for life. Remember the big GTA leak that happened?
I do. I remember the guy basically, he couldn't stop. If I recall correctly, if I'm thinking of the right guy, this was a guy who just, he had like a compulsion. He just couldn't stop hacking into stuff. And I think the GTA leak he did when he was like locked in a hotel room through a hotel TV or something insane like that. It was done with virtually no tools. And it was pretty significant.
Yeah, it says here, this is from Digital Trends by Thomas Frenzes. The Rockstar Games hacker responsible for the September 2022 leaks of Grand Theft Auto 6 has been sentenced in the UK. Arian Kertaj, the 18-year-old Lapis member behind the hacks of Rockstar Games, Uber, and NVIDIA, was just sentenced to an indefinite hospital order, according to the BBC. Yeah, that's a wild sentence to get, Ashley, an indefinite one. That would strike fear in my heart if I heard those words.
Yeah, there was, speaking of making examples, there was another thing that just happened, and this is an EU thing. I don't know if you saw this, but the EU is fining Apple 1.8 billion euro for anti-competitive practices. For doing the translation into US dollars, that's about 1.9 billion US dollars. It's 1.95. That's the five is still is far too big to just round off. So they're doing that. Specifically, they're saying that Apple practiced anti-competitive practices to stifle competition from Spotify with their music product by not allowing Spotify to surface the ability to use their website to get a cheaper subscription price than doing it through the app.
Apple did that? Apple had anti-competitive practices? That's fucking shocking. Wow.
What's really and shocking is that this,
how did we all miss that?
Is that this 1.8 billion euro is, according to the EU, roughly 0.5% of their annual turnover. And they were expecting in the range of maybe a 500 million euro fine. And the EU is saying that they did about quadruple that, what was expected, because they wanted it to feel like more than the price of doing business, essentially, for Apple.
Yeah. Yeah. So that old thing is that a fine means it's legal for rich people, right?
Yes,
and that goes
exactly.
Doubly or tenfold for corporations. Like if you get slapped with a small fine. There was another thing recently where South Korea slapped Twitch with a fine, and it was all over the headlines. We should look it up and see the actual number. But they, and by the way, Twitch is Amazon. People don't often say that. Like when they talk about their favorite Twitch streamers, they talk them like they're independent artists and everything. They're Amazon subcontractors who don't get any benefits. And we should, I think we should really start talking about Twitch and these big aggregate services these ways. But they slapped Twitch with this fee. Or this fine that sounds huge on paper, but it's nothing.
It was, looking at this, it was $300,000. And that is because, this is a very weird thing too. It's Twitch announced that they were leaving South Korea. South Korea doesn't have any sort of net neutrality laws. And so a lot of carriers were charging extra to Twitch to get access to those internet carriers users, basically, or to have fast traffic. And Twitch said that they couldn't afford it. It made South Korea not viable as a market for them. And they decided to exit South Korea as a market. And South Korea fined them on the way out because they said that's not in the interest of consumers. They fined them $300,000.
$300,000. How long do you think it took Twitch to make that amount of money?
Oh, well, that depends on who was doing a sub drive.
You know, it is interesting to think about that because when you ever see the amount of money that any online creator, YouTube, Twitch, whatever, when they make any amount of money, the company makes that amount or more typically. It's not always that. The splits are different for different people and across different platforms. But as a general rule of thumb, you can say just like double it because they get about half of what the platform gets, the creator ends up getting that, which means the platform gets half of it as well. So whenever you see some huge numbers, like lists of top streamers, lists of top YouTube stars, and it has their money and their net worth next to them, when you see the money coming in, just go ahead and add all of that up. And that's what the platform is getting on top of everything else that they're not sharing with the creators. It's wild. It's an incredible amount of money. Yeah. You know, I would say I would reach out to you to our audience and say, if you guys know, I don't know much about the South Korean gaming culture. I can imagine it's absolutely huge for streamers over there. Even though it's a smaller market, it's probably just like everything else that's for young people and modern media. It's probably just ravenous fans that watch everything. In fact, when I think about the early like live streaming of games, I think of StarCraft when it was huge in South Korea. And you would have one camera that was essentially one screen showing the game and then a separate camera on the person's hand, the mouse and the keyboard, showing how many commands per minute they were issuing.
Oh, yeah. I remember one of the earliest ways that I ever saw esports consumed is when I was with Ubisoft. There was a girl who was really into StarCraft esports, and she would download a gameplay file. That it was like the gameplay actions, and you would load it into the game, and it would essentially recreate the match. It wasn't a video recording. It was like an action recording. And so you feed it into the game, and then it would take all the actions that were noted in this log. I forget what it's called. And you could essentially watch the game in your game take place. Does that make any sense?
Do
I sound like a crazy person?
No, no, no. What you're saying makes perfect sense. So we were talking about yesterday the early days of Machinima and Red versus Blue. Machinima, the genre, and Red versus Blue, not Machinima, the Big M company. One of the things that set us apart was that we were one of the first people to issue videos that you could download and watch. Like you could, I had to encode WMV for Windows, DivX for Linux, and QuickTime movies for people watching on Apple. Up until then, everything was Flash. And then for Machinima specifically, the way Machinima shorts were released, there was only a few really before Red versus Blue, but the way that they were released was as WAD files in Doom. And it was the same kind of thing. A WAD file was you would have to have Doom to play the short, if that makes sense. And it would just be a scripted thing that would actually run through the Doom engine and you would watch it natively in the game, which I think is really cool, you know, but it does make it a little bit less accessible for a broader audience. But that's what really helped Red versus Blue explode, is literally anybody could watch it.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, it was a cool early way to let people watch other people play. And it, of course, has been superseded now that the video is so much easier to distribute and stream and all that stuff. But without that technology, this was what they came up with. And it was actually, I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, but if you're a fan of South Korean gaming culture and you know, like, what do people watch over there? Because obviously Twitch is not the streaming service of choice, and I'm curious what it is over there. And while we're talking about the audience, I do have to give a shout-out, as it were, to someone in our subreddit, Evils Bane. Mr. Bane, may I call you Evils? He said, after my comments about the growing national debt, he said, honestly, I forgot over the years Bernie's absolute fascination with the void. I'm not saying he shouldn't have one, but he certainly surprises me on occasion with how much he thinks about bad ends. Well, let me say, first of all, yeah, okay. Okay.
Accurate.
Sometimes I like to run numbers on things. This is what I like to do. In the short term, a lot of times when you can run numbers, at least on my infinitesimally small level compared to the U.S. economy, whenever I'm running numbers, it's like amortization tables or just like projections in Excel. When you get up to these big numbers, I get fascinated by it because we really don't know, like, all the factors that go into the economy and where things are heading. And yesterday I was trying to talk about how the growing national debt in comparison to the GDP, but actually a stat came out this week, and this was reported on by CBS News. Stat came out that says U.S. interest payments on its debts are set to exceed defense spending. Should we be worried?
Whoa.
And here's what it says. That's something I think people can relate to. This is by Amy Peachy. Federal spending on interest payments is forecast to hit $870 billion this year, exceeding the $822 billion that the nation will spend on defense in 2024, according to a recent analysis by the Congressional Budget Office. This year's outlay for interest payments represents a 32% increase from last year's $659 billion in interest expense. So now interest is exceeding our projected defense budget. And Congress, when they heard this, their comment was, hold my fucking beer, because they can absolutely get defense spending back in front of that, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they will have no trouble prioritizing that. But what I find interesting about that is if you look at it in terms of then what the government has to spend, assuming they were to say, hey, we need to stick to our budget, everybody, is that, like, that's all money that then can't go to government programs. Could be Social Security, Medicare, any of that stuff. It's money that can't go to that stuff because they're paying they're not making any progress on the debt. That's just interest. That's just to keep the debt going at that same level, not even including the increase in debt.
All right. Well, that does it for us today. Ash, I have a travel day tomorrow. So tomorrow is going to be our second ever Morning Someone, or we might be doing a travel day show. Stay tuned to find out.
So
we will be back
butts
to talk to you one way or the other tomorrow. We hope you will be here as well.
Bye, everybody.